The following is a high five moment from highfivecasino.com.
Welcome to Burger Yippee. Would you like a hot apple pie today?
Yes, yes, yeah, I won! Woohoo!
So that's a yes on the apple pie?
I just went big time playing High Five Casino on my phone. Real cash prizes, free daily rewards, over 1,200 games. Yeah!
So yes or no on the apple pie?
Woo! I won again!
I'll take that as a yes. Drive around.
Have you had your high five moment today? Only at highfivecasino.com.
High Five Casino is a social casino. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited. Play responsibly. Conditions apply. See website for details.
High Five Casino.
Welcome to Guys We Fucked. Guys We Fucked.
Guys We Fucked.
I'm Christina.
I'm Corinne.
We're sorry about last night.
The anti-slut shaming podcast. I never stop.
Bonjour, fuckers. Welcome to another episode of Guys We Fucked.
It is the anti-slut shaming podcast. I'm Corinne.
I'm Christina. And today's episode is sponsored by Talkspace, the online therapy company that lets you message a licensed therapist from anywhere at any time, even if you're Steven Penta sitting in a bedroom. Can't imagine fitting another appointment into your life? Zoinks! Well, Talkspace therapy is as easy as sending your therapist a text message. No commutes, no leaving the office, no judgments. To match with a perfect therapist for a fraction of the price of traditional therapy, go to Talkspace.com/GWF and use code GWF to get $30 off your first month and to show your support for this show. That's GWF at talkspace.com/GWF. Come see us live tonight. I swear to fucking God, we're in New Jersey, Hasbrook Heights at the Bananas Comedy Club. And if you don't fucking come, we have two shows. I'll fucking tell your mom that she smells. And we also have two shows tomorrow night, Saturday. So be there.
Oh, my favorite thing is when people do Jersey accents. Okay, Denver, Colorado. We're going to be at Comedy Works March 15th through the 17th. I love Colorado. We're going to be there.
I love weed and Colorado as well.
Christina loves weed.
Love it so much.
It's going to be exciting. That club is phenomenal. And then Charlotte, North Carolina. You've been begging us to come. And oh my God, we are coming to the Comedy Zone March 22nd through the 24th. For all these things, tickets are available at sorryaboutlastnightcomedy.com/tours. Please buy tickets. And maybe don't wait till the day before because it gives us a fucking heart attack.
Yeah.
And then we think that we can't go. And we always post about new dates and locations on our social media. So go ahead and give us a follow. Our duo account is called Sorry About Last Night on all platforms. It's SRY About Last NYT on Twitter. I'm Philanthropy Gal on all social media platforms.
I'm Christina Hutch with two Y's because suck it.
And then on Monday, April 2nd, 2018, Rosebud Baker, who you've heard on the podcast before, and I are coming out with a podcast called Two Less Lonely Girls. And if you're thinking to yourself, that sounds like a Justin Bieber song, it's because it kind of is, but added another girl. That's right. What the podcast market was looking for, a 30-minute podcast that's two grown women unironically talking about their love of Justin Bieber. Not for you. Well, it's probably not going to be for a lot of people, but you probably know one person in your life who this is going to be for. Rosebud Baker and I have a lot of pop culture knowledge and we're going to be sharing it. The world is not in great shape right now and possibly Justin Bieber can save us all. So stay tuned for that. And it's great because it's a podcast and you can listen to it in your me undies. It's much, but that's what I love about podcasting. You can do it in your me undies.
You can do it with your dick out.
You can listen to it in your me undies. Me undies are the best underwear you will ever own. Christine and I both own multiple pairs.
I'm sitting in them right now.
They are very, very comfortable. They're made from a sustainably sourced, naturally soft fabric that is three times softer than cotton. Me undies will be the most comfortable pair of underwear you own. They are the ultimate feel-good undies for when you want to feel naked, but not actually be naked. Ladies, they come in tons of different colors and styles, including solids and lace, boy short, bikini, and thong. Something for everyone and every occasion. That's actually my favorite thing about MeUndies. I fucking hate that when you're an adult, all of a sudden everything has to become boring. And they have new patterns that they introduce. They do special mix-ups with artists, and they have like featured underwear of the month. I think it's so interesting. Like, why does life have to be boring when you're an adult? It absolutely doesn't. Fellas, the diamond seamed pouch gives your stuff the support it needs without feeling too tight. And I gotta tell you, it does make your dick look phenomenal. Like, I never thought I would say to my boyfriend, your dick looks phenomenal, but I said that to James
when he was covered in MeUndies.
His MeUndies. It looked nice. Really good. He has a nice dick, but I wouldn't say that to him normally. MeUndies is so sure you will love their underwear. They offer a 100% satisfaction guarantee. If you don't love your first pair, get a full refund. Right now, Guys We Fucked listeners will get 20% off your first pair and free shipping. It's a no-brainer, guys. 20% off, free shipping, and 100% satisfaction guarantee. What are you waiting for? To get your 20% off free shipping and the 100% satisfaction guarantee and get the best and softest underwear you will ever own, go to MeUndies.com/GWF. That's MeUndies.com/GWF. It's a limited time offer. Start wearing the best underwear of your life.
And cooking the best meals you've ever eaten before. Yes, guys, it's my dad's best friend and mine, and soon to be yours if it's not already. Blue Apron is the leading meal kit delivery service in the United States of America. Well, so many people know what Blue Apron does. Many don't know about the types of meals that you eat when you cook with Blue Apron, like quick bucatini with broccoli and pecorino cheese and Italian-style shrimp and sweet peppers. Is your mouth watering? Mine is. With incredible ingredients and chef-designed recipes, Blue Apron lets you see what the power of food can do. Blue Apron delivers fresh, pre-portioned ingredients with step-by-step recipe cards right to your door. Those recipe cards also have photos, which for me is very helpful. That can be all cooked, these meals, under 45 minutes. The menu changes every week based on what's in season and is designed by Blue Apron's in-house culinary team. They offer 12 new recipes every week. Customers can pick 2, 3, or 4 recipes based on what fits their schedule. Blue Apron sends only non-GMO ingredients and meat with no added hormones. It's really exciting. And then if you go in, see a little Blue Apron dashboard, you can cancel one meal for a week if you're going to be out of town, and then you could resume the next week. You could change the recipe to another recipe if you don't like what they're about to send you. I don't eat pork or beef, so you just click I don't eat pork or beef on their dashboard and they don't send you pork or beef. It's really fucking cool. It's fresh. It just feels so much better to eat fresh food, and it also feels better when you fucking cooked it and you didn't think you would ever be able to make Italian style shrimp and sweet pepper. So yeah, it's really fucking fun. Blue Apron is treating Guys We Fucked listeners to $30 off your first order if you visit blueapron.com/GWF. So check out this week's menu and get $30 off at blueapron.com/GWF. Blue Apron, a better way to cook.
Oh my gosh. I'm so excited to be getting Blue Apron again because I've been watching on Netflix the show Ugly Delicious. I know you don't like cooking shows.
Oh no, I actually scrolled over that thumbnail and debated watching the pizza episode.
I'm obsessed with this show, so much so that I actually went to one of Dave Chang, who's the creator of Momofuku. I went to one of his restaurants.
Oh, now I want Momofuku Milk Bar.
I went to Momofuku Nishi and Momofuku Milk Bar yesterday.
We did. Did you get the cereal milk?
No, I got a baby Quake, which is
what's that?
They're doing like new like quakes. I mean, it's kind of like a nod to Dairy Queen, I would say.
Whoa, like a Momofuku.
It basically tasted like a cake batter with sprinkles in it.
Wow,
it was fantastic. Because I like the cereal milk, but not as much as you do. It's a little tart for me.
Oh, okay, I like the tart.
I don't mind it, but I'm not always in the mood for it. Like sometimes after a meal, I just want pure sweet, not tart. Tart,
yeah,
alone if it's a snack. But we had just eaten a lot of weird pastas, and I love this show because I love specifically chefs talking about food because they love food as much as I do.
Yeah,
like a lot of times in my life, I'm like, should I have been a chef? I feel like I would not like food in the way I do if I had become a chef because it's a very stressful occupation.
Yeah. And you get burned a lot. Your arms are like all burned.
But I basically just want to be friends with celebrity chefs. I have one celebrity chef friend and I'm working on others.
You do too?
Well, I mean, I talk to him a lot. Justin Warner. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I forget he's a chef and he not just, evaluate snacks.
I am just obsessed with cooking and people who are passionate. And I kind of want to start traveling the world and looking into cuisine. So also, I wanted to specifically ask, since we have a lot of different people who listen to the podcast, if you're a chef in New York City and you would let me come and just like watch what you do for a day, I won't be annoying. I don't honestly talk that much in real life.
It's true. She doesn't.
If I can just like shadow you for a day, it would really make my life. Like,
I should ask Jeff about that.
I'm trying to create like a real Mr. Rogers neighborhood experience for myself.
Yeah.
But like, if you are like a sous chef at a restaurant or something, I'm obsessed. And I do want to open a restaurant one day. Which I know is a huge financial risk.
Dude, you should talk to Jeff.
But I really, really, well, I do. I always talk to him when we're together.
He made me appreciate food. He's taught me how to cook so many fancy things. Yeah. And I'm like, oh.
Well, because my love of food, like, I mean, there were some times when they were talking about food and I was like going to cry. Like, I feel so passionately about food.
Yeah.
And cooking it. And that's why I'm like, I have to start cooking again because I don't have a lot of time. Like I like doing it
having these simple
meals or like having dinner parties or something. Yeah. Like I just love food and learning about, and they were traveling to Mexico and Italy and just like kind of using local goods. And I'm like, it makes me so sad that we are not a more market-based culture in America, like where you go and get fresh food every day.
Yeah.
And it's like, especially like being a young woman in the entertainment business, like so much time is spent like dieting. And I'm like, I'm trying to like push it more to like just eating fresh foods.
Yeah.
Because it's like when I talk about like when I went to Israel, like, you know, I was eating so much food, but it's cleaner. And then you just think like, what the fuck am I putting in my body?
I know.
In America, which is, you know,
a lot of bullshit chemical,
just
shit.
A lot of bad stuff.
Yup.
But that's why I got a quiche from Whole Foods the other day, you know, but I should just have made the quiche myself. But
well, sometimes you need to buy a quiche, girl.
Someone made it.
Okay, we're going to read some emails. If you want to send us an email, you could do it by sending it to sorryaboutlastnightshow@gmail.com. The subject line of this email is, help, my brother is 14 and a womanizer.
Uh-oh.
Hey, ladies, love the podcast. My brother is 14 and really coming to terms with his sexuality. He was always a very sweet boy and we got along so well. Recently, he moved schools and we barely talk anymore. I figured it was a puberty thing and we would pick up again once he caught up with me. My phone died recently and I have been using an old phone of his in the meantime, which his Instagram is logged in on. This is the main messaging platform that his friends use. I began to find myself getting messages popping up from girls. He is very secretive about any relationships, as was I. It's not something we really talk about. So of course I got curious and I knew I shouldn't have looked, but I did. I quickly found that my brother was a horrible human being. He was talking to about 5 girls at once, all talking about the same thing. He would out of nowhere ask these girls bra size. Have you lost your virginity? Asking for nudes, sending dick pics, slut shaming. I could go on. Basically, completely taking advantage of the fact that he is sporty and popular and attractive and has many admirers who just want a little attention. This really upsets me and goes against everything I stand for. I know this isn't really who he is, but I can't get over what he's doing. If I confront him and tell him that his behavior is not okay, I fear he will lose all trust in me and our relationship will never be the same, which is very important to me. If I do nothing, he will keep up this disgusting act and maybe never stop. Part of me thinks it may just be hormones and he will quit once he matures. I'm so shocked and upset. What would you do in my situation?
How old is that girl again?
Did she say?
Oh, I don't know.
I don't think she did.
I was thinking about food for the first couple sentences.
No, I had to redirect He's 14. It's
okay. No, I know that part. Yeah.
But it doesn't say how old she is. But you definitely should talk to him. He's not a bad person. Mm-hmm. He clearly learned to behave like this. And he seems to be in the beginning stages of acting like a douchebag. To be honest, a lot of kids, when I was 14, a lot of the guys were really sweet. And then most of them are douchebags. And a lot of girls are douchebags too. And I feel like that's when you're 14, you're kind of finding your footing with how to talk to the opposite sex or the sex that you're attracted to. So I think having a conversation with him, but not berating him about it. I would just say, hey, these messages have been popping up on my phone because they're private Instagram messages and I saw it. And And then I just, and I looked at it and it was, you were kind of saying these vulgar things to these women. Like, what do you, does that, has that been working for you? That's what I would ask, honestly.
Right.
Because I wouldn't say like, you're a terrible piece of shit. Then he's going to put a wall up and he's not going to talk to you because he's probably going to be maybe a little embarrassed that you were looking at his private messages, which I understand. But I would bring it up that way and just say it popped up on the phone. Cause whatever, you snooped, I guess, but you know, that's not going to change, but I still would bring it up to him in a more conversational manner.
Right. I agree that you should talk to him about it. I would, my opinion, I would approach it a little bit differently just because if someone looked at my shit, I would flip out. And I feel like teens are really sensitive about snooping. Yeah. So, and I also, I did a lot of research on snooping for the book. And so it's, they kind of make the argument, like a lot of psychologists say, like, well, if you, it's really hard to win an argument with someone, even if you're correct, if you snooped to get the information, because it's there is that breach of trust there. So, I mean, this is what I do. And I've done this with actually adults in my life. Not that I snooped on, but just instead of having a direct conversation with them, we're like, why the fuck did you do that? Because I wasn't sure how they would react. Kind of like creating a false scenario, like with a friend or something, like, oh, my friend, you know, said this to a woman in front of me, and I was really, I was really insulted by it. And I hope that you wouldn't talk to women like that or something. Like, make up a fake scenario or a fake
friend. Ask if he's dating and say, how's it going? How do you talk to women? Because, you know, you could even blame the news in the age of the Me Too era. You know, you're my little brother and I care about you. And I'm just curious, like, what is your approach usually with women?
Yeah, something like
when
that.
When I was 14, guys were dicks to me and blah, 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 you know?
Yeah.
Related with that.
And kind of just like how appropriate ways is to talk to a woman, or just like asking him questions and kind of like leading him into conversations and going around. Like, you can address what you need to address without addressing it head on, which is sometimes hard. It seems like he's obviously pretty insecure if he's talking to people in that manner.
Yeah.
And so
everybody's insecure at that age too.
It's just
a lot
hard
are.
To respond to like a direct confrontation. And while we're dealing with men, let's deal with this. This next email says,
dicks.
Help. Is it still sexual assault if he's gay? Well, let's see. It certainly can be. Hey, girls. Thanks for taking the time to read this. First off, love the podcast. I listen to you guys on my commutes to and from work, and it really helps me get through my shifts. So I am a 23-year-old college graduate working a shitty waitress job at a high-end resort. One of my managers consistently gropes me, grabs my boobs, pokes my ass, bites my ear. I always say stop, but in a polite tone. Ugh, of course, because you're training as a woman to do so.
Fucking bite my ear and punch you in the dick.
I just want to do my job and go home. The less drama and confrontation, the better. The catch is that he's gay. After mentioning it to my boyfriend, he immediately told me to go to HR. I put it off for a while because I didn't know if it was as big of a deal as my boyfriend thought because of my manager's sexuality. But eventually I went to HR. They seemed to take it seriously and said they were glad I came in and knew how much courage that it took. That was a good response of them. However, the groping has not stopped at all.
Wow.
There was not even a lull. Everyone around me is telling me to go to the head of the company, call the cops, etc. I'm not sure what I should do next. Due to the fact that he is homosexual and I heterosexual, I feel it's not exactly sexual harassment or assault. It truly makes me feel uncomfortable and distracted at work. However, I am also going to be leaving that job in a month because I am moving. People are also encouraging me to take more action so that it does not continue for others at this workplace as well. I would really like your thoughts on this. Any suggestions either of you have? I'm stuck and not sure what my next step in this situation should be. Much love and thanks, Vic. You can use my name. Okay.
That's still assault.
Yeah, 100%. So I think there's a confusion that assault always has to be like that the person is romantically interested in you. But it's basically like it can just be like someone touching a part of your body that you do not want them touching. It can be like I'm a straight woman. It can be a woman touching me. It could be a gay man touching me. It can be a lesbian touching me. It can be a straight man touching me. It can be an asexual person touching me. Like
it could be a dog.
Anyone.
And, you know, you can't really do much. But.
Well, there's been cases where if someone has a dog and they consistently let the dog like grope someone's vagina, that is actually considered sexual assault.
Really?
Because you're in control of your fucking dog.
Yeah, that's true.
Like you can tell your dog to stop, and like people really do get sexual arousal off of like having a dog constantly sniff like a woman's vagina.
Dogs always
which
sniff
dogs
pussies.
Love vaginas.
They
yeah.
do.
Yeah. Any stinky ears they like. I mean, that's true. But it's also like the scent of their owner.
Any hole. Yeah.
So yeah, and I wanted to kind of talk about this because there's been a lot of situations on the internet recently where like gay men have been like mansplaining feminism. Or thinking that because they are also an oppressed group, and in many cases, you know, in many instances more oppressed than a straight woman, that they somehow have more say in things regarding to feminism, like, you know, inclusiveness and, you know, and just big statements on like, even like, if you're a gay man, like I have more to say about like trans women being included in feminism and like all this stuff. It's very muddy. But gay men are still men.
True.
And they are still treated for the most part. Obviously there's like super flamboyant people who, you know, kind of always treated as outcasts. But in my experience, you know, I've definitely been mansplained by gay men like a lot. And there is still kind of an air of like, because I am a man, I am more important, that I don't even know if gay men realize it. But I think it's such an interesting area of feminism and mansplaining and like male superiority that's not often talked about because they are an oppressed group. But I'm like, well, I fucking love gay people, so I'm gonna shout it out from a rooftop.
Yeah.
Because it's something that I experience a lot, and it's just as fucking equally annoying.
Yeah.
It really
No one wants to be talked down to like they're a fucking idiot.
Yeah, I
especially in subjects that they know about very well.
Right. Like, yeah, I mean, to have some fucking like YouTube makeup artist, which I don't want to talk down about that, whatever, you know, you're bringing joy to people's lives.
Hey, I've watched some of them and had to do an eyeliner thing.
But to have someone kind of go back at me about feminism, something that I've literally dedicated the past 4+ years of my life to, who doesn't know about it and is not, I don't care how feminine presenting or acting, or that it's a person who identified as a man, and to tell me about feminism,
made me want to
fucking punch him in the face.
Yeah.
And so you can absolutely still mansplain. You can absolutely still sexually assault a straight woman if you're a gay man. And I know that a lot of like straight women kind of like walk on eggshells around that. But I mean, there was that pretty famous incident where I believe it was Isaac Mizrahi grabbed
Kathy Griffin's breasts.
It was Isaac Mizrahi,
yeah,
right? He's a designer.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
And he grabbed Kathy Griffin's tits. And I remember how proud of her I was that she fucking said something. Because, you know, again, a huge advocate to the LGBTQ community, Kathy Griffin. But she was like, no, I don't care if he's gay. He
don't
does
grab
not
my tits.
Own my body. You cannot touch someone else's fucking body like that. No matter if, even if you're not, if it's not the gender that you're sexually attracted
to. Did she say in this email that she told the guy to stop? Not that that's whatever. I'm just
right.
Curious.
It seems like she might not have.
Because I would have said, you knock it the fuck off right now.
She
did.
I think she said it politely, and I think that's the problem. Mm-hmm. But it's also like, you know, you shouldn't have to yell something at someone. But I mean, I think she should definitely keep on it, keep on HR, especially because you're leaving in a month. Like when you're leaving in a month, that's to me doesn't say be
Go
quiet.
Hard.
That says be louder.
Yeah.
My advice, honestly, in this situation is fucking embarrass him. Embarrass him loudly 100%. In front of others because sometimes that's the best tactic.
You just grabbed my breast.
Yeah.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Not going to do that again.
Yeah.
And I've never had. I mean, having a gay male friend I feel like most times I feel safer with gay men versus a straight man. Just
sure.
I'm like, they're not going to try to do anything weird. And then it is this weird like freedom thing of like, you can touch my body and it's fine. But like when you consent to it and it's obviously okay. Like I've actually had discussions with gay men of like, yeah, you can touch my boob. I don't care.
Right.
And then they did and it was fine. And it was like, oh, this is weird to have a man touch me like that. And it's not violating. It's not, and I gave the okay and it's not sexual and it's not weird. It's just like, oh, this can happen and it's fine. And it is this interesting little facet of like, it's weird to feel that way with a man and it's cool. It's great. But he's your fucking manager or whatever, where you work, and he's doing that at your work. No, that's not your friend. Mm-hmm. Tell him to back the fuck off right now.
Yeah.
And if he doesn't, you will make it very vocally clear, very loudly every time he touches you inappropriately. Biting your ear? Get the fuck out of my face with that shit.
Right. Yeah.
Bite my fucking ear.
Right.
Bite
and I mean,
fucking.
And it also goes both ways. There's
life.
Certainly a lot of instances where, you know, young women are kind of notoriously annoying at gay bars. And so just the same way as, you know,
some are.
You don't want a gay man because he is still a man, and or just still someone you don't want touching your body, body. Like, you also like can't go into a gay club and like grope people's dicks. So I just want to also throw that out there too, because that's also a common problem. But it's, it goes both ways. And just like someone's sexual orientation does not give them the thumbs up or thumbs down in touching a body. It's just, it's still your body. You own it. And only people you want touching it who have been given explicit consent to do so may do so. And you shouldn't feel bad or weird just because someone is, you know, quote unquote, you know, less threatening because they are not interested in your gender. And that is that.
Our guest. Wow, you guys. I'm very excited. Very excited for this guest this week. As we always are.
Thrilling.
But like, this is a person that I've been wanting to talk to. And I know, Corinne, you've been wanting to talk to for a while. He is, he's the king of partying. He is a musician. He's a performer. He had a great longstanding advice column with The Village Voice. He's a New York City staple and a legend. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome to the show, Andrew W.K.
Having me on the show.
Yeah, thanks for having a conversation about being polite to not let people in on your inner demons or your inner feelings.
Not let yourself in.
Let yourself in. Oh,
you're
okay.
Trying to be.
That's a good method.
Raise yourself to a slightly higher level of emotional operation, and a really easy way to do that is to have better manners, I suppose, or I don't know. It's a habit at this point, but
have you ever lost your shit?
No, well, of course. Yeah. All the time. And
all the time.
Well, I would say so. I'm less than some, more than others.
Mm-hmm. I lose my shit a lot.
So
what does losing your shit look like for you?
Probably tensing every muscle in the body as hard as I can.
Yeah.
Maybe in the past I would have more of an outburst and curse or something like that outwardly. But now I find myself just doing that. And that really helps. That actually, yeah. I feel like that's a really great release.
Yeah, I've been debating getting a punching bag because I took a kickboxing class once and it was a really good outlet for rage.
Sure.
And it wasn't hurting anybody.
It's hard to, you'd have to have a portable punching bag though, could be challenging.
So yeah.
If you're out there in the world and in the midst and something like that happens, and it's still not advisable in that I think it can still disturb people, even if people are very perceptive.
Oh yeah.
You can tell if someone's distraught like that.
And then if they have a portable punching bag with them, it's like, well, that's obvious.
Yeah. That would really stick out.
Watch out for that guy.
Yeah.
Now you look to be very physically fit. Is that from all the muscle tensing that you're doing or do you actually like, do you go to the gym as an outlet or just for fitness?
Well, as you said, I've also found that exercise has a positive effect on my feelings.
Mm-hmm.
And it's something I do look forward to. And even I would say it's almost compulsive at this point. But for example, yesterday and the day before, I felt distraught throughout the day at different moments. And I was able to say, well, later I'll be able to go to the gym. And it was able to, and it gave me a moment of serenity, just knowing that I'd have a place to push out that feeling, to have something literally like a weight to push against, where you can take, like you're saying, to lash out at something that's inherently positive, like exercise. It's definitely good, but it's hard if you, again, like the portable punching bag problem, if you can't have a way to instantly deal with those feelings, that's, it can be problematic. And the goal is to get to a place where I don't say that you're so serene that you don't have those emotions, but where you can, where the space between having the emotion reacting to it is reduced very, very, very to a very small space.
Yeah. Because you should celebrate if you have like anger inside of you or depression or anxiety. It's like you can recognize that it exists is helpful, because to pretend it's not there. I used to try to meditate when I was in public and I would want to have like a meltdown. And then that made me more angry.
Oh,
when I told myself to calm down,
I also
told myself to shut the fuck up. And I was like, all right, well, that's not really working well.
Well, so sometimes I feel like you just need to feel the feelings and like kind of let them pass through rather than push them down.
Yeah.
Just let them float. Now, may I ask, you said something about obsession. I have obsessive compulsive disorder. Do you?
I don't think so.
Oh, okay. I was just wondering, because you said obsessed, and then I did notice when Stephen put the glass in front of you, you moved it ever so slightly so that it wasn't on the crease. And I was like, does he have OCD? Because that's something I would absolutely do. I don't want you in your head now thinking that you have OCD.
I just diagnosed you.
I don't want you thinking that. I was just
maybe
curious.
Maybe I do.
I'm fascinated by, I always like watching like young people especially, and I'm like, oh, that person has OCD and they don't even know it yet.
I imagine there's a spectrum. So maybe I have a small amount. I don't know. I didn't want it to be on to tip over.
Right, right.
And it's also
that's
wet.
Logical.
It's wet, and I hadn't expected it to arrive.
Yeah.
So I think it was a combination of all those factors.
Hey, reactive.
Speaking of wet, how did you learn about sex? I got transitioned.
That
for
was
days.
So smooth.
Thank you.
You kind of asked about that before we started our official talk, and it just occurs to me, I don't remember how I first learned.
Okay.
Or when I first learned.
Do your parents give you a talk?
No.
Oh, nothing, huh?
I mean, you said, oh, did you have sex ed in school?
Yeah.
And I had that, but surely that couldn't have been the first time.
Yeah, because usually there's always a moment with guys that I talk to where they see a porno at their friend's house, or there's someone like found a Playboy in the woods and they're like, get a load of this. And then your life is just forever changed. Do you remember that?
I had those experiences like that, but it wasn't, I'd already been aware of sex.
What sex was. Yeah. Do you remember the first time you saw a porn magazine or a sex related thing that made you go, what the hell is this?
It seemed like it was very gradual. That I think I saw dollops of that imagery over many, many different instances.
Yeah. And did you always have a good relationship with sex and sexuality to your own sexuality?
I guess. I had never thought about it.
So you never had, like, how was dating for you in high school? When did you lose your virginity?
I don't remember exactly what age it was. Either 14 or 15, I think.
Okay.
And that was with my first girlfriend, and I was with her for about 5 or 6 years.
Oh, wow. That's a long time. Oh, that sounds like so it was a good experience.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
But it was very, it didn't seem like a very big deal one way or the other.
Okay.
But I'm quite struck. What's actually really interesting to me now is how I haven't really thought about these things in a poignant way.
Yeah.
Perhaps ever. These first encounters, I mean, I've thought about them a lot, but never what was the very first time.
Right.
Just sort of emerged, or it seemed as though these things were always there. And
it seemed like maybe they went down in a healthy way then. If they didn't really impact you in a negative.
Maybe so.
Have you ever had any sexual hangups?
Not that I know of. But I don't even
smooth
know. But
sound.
Again, it's like I don't know what that would be to have it be a hangup or not.
Like, I'm trying to think of a sexual hangup for a guy. Do they have any?
I guess it would be like getting an erection.
Oh, when you don't want to.
When you don't want to, or not getting an erection when you want to.
Oh yeah, that gotta equally suck.
Not in a pronounced way. I mean, I've had those experiences, I suppose, but it didn't seem like a good or bad thing.
Oh, okay.
It seemed sometimes you get a cramp when you're running. You know,
but like sometimes your boner doesn't do what you wanted to do.
I guess, yeah. But it never to a point where I had thought about it before this.
Oh, okay. So really, you're pretty sexually healthy, like I would say. I was, meaning if you didn't have any.
It's just been quite, I wouldn't say it's been a big part of my life. And maybe that's one of the things, that's one of the things I've noticed more is not from other people I've met or that I've been close to so much, but I've gotten the sense from society at large that it's supposed to be much more of a big deal than it seemed to be to me. And I've grown to resent that.
Interesting.
Definitely. I've definitely felt this anger because I feel like these people are being dishonest with themselves and with the world. But it's possible they're being honest and I'm the one being dishonest. And I think that's where the tension comes and the resentment.
No, yeah. I understand what you think. I was actually just talking with a friend yesterday about how I think that people perhaps are spending too much time thinking and obsessing over sexuality to the point where it seems like some people are constantly like stuck in childhood. Because like just talking about it every week for 4 years, I'm like, okay, well, I feel like, you know, that's
other shit you
there's other
about.
Things that I'm interested
like
in.
Like you've covered it.
Right, at this point. And so like for you, what are things that you've spent longer periods of time thinking about or that you've had hanging ups about that aren't sexual?
I'd say feelings and inhabiting the world and being a person, but there that's bound up in that. I realized sure. that someone asked me the other day something about sex in some questionnaire, and I said it's simultaneously the most important and least important thing in
that's
my life.
The perfect answer,
and that's how I feel about it. So it's not like a take it or leave it
right.
attitude, but I think it's extremely powerful. Yet it needs to be directed. And I think it's powerful in a way that goes far beyond the physical, far beyond reproduction, far beyond pleasure or pain, far beyond the mental or the emotional into a life force power.
Yeah.
And then, of course, you can direct that and try to acknowledge that in a rather detached way as just sort of a fact of nature and not let it dictate too much beyond that. I've seen certainly people who have I guess people I've worked with who have had really tumultuous ongoing relationships with whoever they've been with. And it seems like that's their main interest in life is the kind of surging vortex of intensity that can manifest out of directing the sexual drive in different ways. And some could say in unhealthy ways, but for this person, I think it was kind of their main, I won't even say hobby. It was sort of like their gift.
Interest.
Yeah, their main interest.
Yeah. What captivated them.
Well, that is like, that's like their relationship. There's a relationship like that, like Javier Bardem's relationship in Vicky Cristina Barcelona, which is one of my favorite relationship movies.
I'm aware of that film. I haven't seen it though.
Yeah, I highly recommend it. And there is a relationship like that the one you described in that. And I told my mom that I liked that relationship. She's like, don't ever tell anyone. I was like, well, sorry.
I think some people like tumultuous and that's, you know, if you like it.
Yeah, couples who say they never fight. I'm like, oh, please.
Even if it is painful, it's like your version of cutting. You know what I mean? Like, it's like you like to experience the emotional turmoil is the only really word I can, that makes sense for it. But some people like it. And that's not, if you like it, you like it.
I wouldn't judge them and unless they asked for advice or they thought, why do you think my life is going like this?
Yeah, you know, exactly. And if they don't give a shit.
Right.
They don't give a shit. Well, I don't give a shit.
Yeah. So it reminds me of someone smoking. They're aware that there's potentially bad sides to this, quote unquote, bad sides. But the for them, the good sides outweigh that.
Clearly.
Yeah,
that's the turmoil I'm currently experiencing. But, you know, you don't smoke. You don't do any.
I have smoked.
You have smoked cigarettes?
Yeah.
Yeah. And then just for like
I tried it
randomly.
I wanted to do it. I really wanted to have that experience. My dad's been a long time smoker, and I think it was coming from that, and not even in a very subconscious way. But I was fascinated by the packaging and the world, the whole world, the
just
whole
the
phenomenon.
Coolness of it. Well,
that was the one part that I couldn't.
I fell for the cool factor.
I struggled with the actual smoking itself because I always felt worse physically after it.
I'll do that to you.
My smoking friend said, "Oh, you just work through that feeling for the first few weeks.
It's screwed up, isn't it?
Yeah. Like anal sex? Up? Like what? The
yeah,
hell is that?
Yeah. Eventually, after your 30th cigarette, it will feel like just a regular thumb up there, or whatever. You know."
Yeah, that sounds like, because the first time I smoked a cigarette, I was like, never again. This is atrocious.
Right.
See, when I started smoking, Steven dated Stoya, porn star, right before I did. And I remember when we first started dating, he was like, smoking doesn't seem very you. It was Stoya. When she smoked, it made sense. But you don't. And I'm like, and then I smoked more and that's why I got addicted to it. Okay.
Then you're like, it's on, bitch.
I smoked too, motherfucker.
Right, right. I can see that. Yeah, that was not.
So I did it out of stubbornness. And now it's like, it's not. And then I really liked it. And then the reasonings for not smoking, I quit. It's been 10 days.
Oh, but, congratulations.
Thank you.
That's
and
huge.
I have polyps on my vocal cord. So there's all, and health reasons. I mean, it's stupid to smoke. And I knew that. But yeah, there's that inner toddler in me that goes, I want a cigarette now. And that's when I'm having trouble grasping and not feeding that inner toddler, you know.
That's a huge achievement to be able to be able to master that.
Yeah.
Will have amazing effects on all sorts of other areas of your life.
I hope so. That's what I'm hoping for. Have you ever had to give something up that you didn't want to, but you knew it was for the better?
The smoking thing, smoking, alcohol, certain foods, many patterns of behavior, even just doing certain things at certain times of the day, resting control to be able to make decisions, even with thoughts. I mean, going back to what we were first talking about with those emotional reactions to things, being able to say that there is a director, or I'd like to think that there's a director inside in the midst of all these impulses that I can turn to and let them lead the way and rest control. And that with the sexual desire as well. If you can get in front of that drive and let it, instead of letting it push you or pull you, but use it as a power source and steer it, like riding a horse, essentially. That is, you know, a huge life achievement. Is it even possible? I don't know. Even if you could do it 1% of the time, that would be fantastic. Sort of like harnessing the power of your mind, harnessing the power of your reproductive urge, harnessing, you know, your will. It's willpower. And I do believe there's a lot of skepticism about that.
But about willpower?
Yeah. There's some that say that even free will, you know, does it even exist? Are we tethered to behaviors that we can't even hope to conceive of, let alone get control over?
Yeah.
So who knows?
And sometimes, though, I do, when people turn like something that they don't like into like a kink, for example, like I like cuckolding or cuckqueening or whatever, but it's cuckolding. And I enjoy that because I have a fear of being cheated on. So, and then I turn it into a sexual kink. I'm like, that's awesome. So I think, too, a way to get on top of that is to pretend you like it. Enough,
face your fears.
So you convince yourself and then you actually fall for it.
They do with spiders and things, right? That's the best way to get over a phobia is to
like
interact.
Immersive.
Play with a spider.
Do you have any kinks sexually or otherwise? I mean, I don't know what's a non-sexual kink, but I'm sure people have them.
Well, is that the same as a fetish?
Similar.
Yeah.
Because this is another area where I always felt like I'm doing this wrong. And then I would get very skeptical about the quantity of people that claimed that they were into these things.
Like what things specifically? Like
anything from handcuffs to whips and chains and the things I would see portrayed so frequently around me.
Mm-hmm.
And see, why don't I? And but every now and then I would meet some other peer who would say, "Yeah, I don't find that interesting either."
Mm-hmm.
But I resented it because there was something, it was more that I couldn't just let it go and like, some people are into it. Because I felt there was so much pressure and so much weight being put on these things. Like, I don't know that it
to
just
not be vanilla. Like,
I guess so. Yeah. And then you start to descend for me. I would start to descend into a level of confusion that I feared I could never get back out again of. Not by engaging in these things or experimenting. It's sort of like you can tell that you're not interested in something. And it doesn't mean anything to you, but you have to prove it to yourself by actually trying it. And then you say, it was completely uninteresting. So I don't know. It's just a whole realm of the world that I've only just now started to feel comfortable with that I just don't care about it that much. Kind of like in a very, I'd say, I don't mean this to be disrespectful, but just the way that some people might not really like sports that much.
I thought you were going to say, like, you know, people don't like women. You know, sometimes it's like that.
No, sports is perfect for us. I also don't like sports.
Okay. Well, I like the atmosphere, you know, and I enjoy the athleticism and the challenge of it and the drama.
And the snacks.
The food.
Nachos.
Yeah, the whole surrounding culture. But I might not really understand the rules or care that much about the actual game being played. So same with video games. I love to hang out with people who are passionate about video games and watch them play and have them tell me about the game and the people who make video games. Yeah. I love that. As far as actually playing the game, it's just not something that occurs to me as a way I would rather spend time. And it's only just been recently that I've thought, well, you know what? Especially for men, it seems like there's more pressure I guess because I'm a man and I've seen other men, this is who I'm talking to about this stuff, that this is supposed to really matter and dominate parts of a huge portion of your life and your identity. But maybe that's not even true. Maybe that's how I'm
sex
even
or sports.
Both.
Yeah, I would agree with you.
Yeah.
For sure.
And that if you're not doing it right, then there's something wrong with you. And so I just started to think, well, you know what? Maybe not only is there not something wrong, maybe this is a gift. Maybe this is a gift that I have that I'm not tethered to these interests.
Oh, yeah, you have a lot more time.
Because then look
and
at
focus.
All the other shit you could do. Well, you got maybe. More time for partying.
Yeah, maybe. Or
you got football games.
I think you can have a sexual relationship with life itself.
Whoa.
That's what I think it is.
I think you're right.
And you have a sexual relationship with life.
Yeah. In a good way.
You're creating a reality for yourself, essentially. I really don't want to use that word. You're impregnating destiny with your willpower and your energy, your life, your vitality.
Yeah.
And your life becomes a child, essentially.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it, because I do think like people don't allow themselves to fully enjoy all that they do, but as if there's not enough joy to go around for their life or something. But I'm like, you could make every moment of your day like really good by just immersing yourself in it and saying like, let's make this the most fun thing we can.
Yeah,
and that to me is attitude. And correct me if I'm wrong, but the partying, your partying lifestyle, like you were, it means joy, right, to you?
Oh, yeah. Well, celebrating the fact that you're not dead as much as possible.
Yeah.
And with that in mind, I would talk to a friend once about this, and it was when I was trying to have a baby for the first time, and I was also working on a lot of other projects, and you know, really invested in all these different efforts, and he said, wow, you're really attempting to manifest on many levels. And I thought, wow, it's interesting. It is. You're trying. And I have friends who have been married for years who chose to never have kids. Mm-hmm. And I said, you know, obviously you've thought about this. They said, my work is my child. Like everything goes into this and I'm fulfilled through this. Now it's hard to imagine, for them, I guess purely having a child, clearly, pardon me, is different from work, and I'm not equating them 100%, but you can have you can produce something with your spirit and with your energy on different planes.
Yeah.
And they all count to some degree. And that sexual drive, I do know that when I first moved to New York, for example, I was very, and coming out of high school, very frustrated by, and here, maybe this is starting to come out now that I'm rambling a little bit. I was very hurt, you know, by the girls who wouldn't date me, and very angry and had a lot of, you know, contempt for getting back or proving to them that they would have wished they would have been nicer to me or paid attention to me, or, you know, very common feelings.
Can be very motivating.
It was extremely motivating. And eventually I got more into the work I was doing to prove something than I did when I was.
You forgot about why you even started it in the first place. See, that's so interesting to me, because I think a lot of men, especially when they're teenagers, and women feel this too, but men just get rejected more often because women reject and men get rejected most frequently, I would say.
Well, because men ask more, so mathematically.
That's why I'm always like, women ask men out. But
so you can get rejected.
Yeah, but you should know what it feels like, because man. Man, when a girl gets rejected, when I get rejected, like if I'm even in my relationship for sex, like if I want to have sex and Steven doesn't, that's maybe happened once in 7 years.
Whoa.
I turn into a bratty little baby about it. And I'm like, oh God, I need to get rejected more. I need to learn how to deal with this like a person. Mm-hmm. But with men, I feel like they take that rejection that they feel in their teenage years and they either go the productive route, which is what you were saying, or that I'll show you mentality is fueled towards something, just being a huge piece of shit.
Or a serial killer sometimes.
Yeah.
It's true.
Yeah, just like a murdering a bunch of people. But that drive is so powerful, and it's so fascinating to me all the different paths that drive can take you.
That's very well said. And it's an elemental drive that I think everybody has. And it's okay, well, where are you going to put this? What are you going to do with this? Is it going to be a force of good? Is it going to be a force of destruction? Is it going to be a force of creation? It can lead to beautiful things.
And I often wonder, I'm like, maybe if women were rejected more in that sense, we'd create more shit.
We'd achieve more.
Yeah.
So really,
honestly, yeah. Because Steven always asked me, how come there's no female music producers? There's hardly any. What the fuck? You know? And I do think that drive to like, I'll show them is a huge drive to create. And women don't, I mean, we get rejected in other ways that are, you know, gut wrenching, not being taken seriously in the workplace when you're more qualified than your male coworker, whatever the fuck it is. But that type of rejection we don't get. And I think that can fuel really good art and just career.
So men, if you want to see some more movies by women, just start saying no to sex.
Yeah.
I think that's really what
reject us. We need it.
Yeah.
That's a very radical perspective on it. I never really thought
about it until you brought it up.
Well, just being given things.
That's why talking is good.
Yeah. Just being given things I don't think is ever like super productive to like a learning or a growing process. That's why, you know, even with feminism, like I obviously like want equal rights, but I'm like, we should have to work for them. So like, we really like them when we get them.
I mean, that's,
you know,
it goes back to the very beginning where we were talking about those frustrations and those emotional outbursts.
Yeah.
I can say that at the end of the day, like by last night, for example, once everything the day had been complete, I had a sense of fulfillment, even just to know that we completed these tasks, even if some of them didn't go that well by my estimation.
You tried.
And I was able to keep my composure for the most part. My manager had to listen to me vomit my complaints towards him, but he's well suited.
What a good manager is for.
Yeah, but no one else had to be poisoned by that, and that counts for something.
He seems okay. He looks relaxed.
Yeah, great hair. You got well groomed.
Yeah,
good fashion.
Doing well.
Manager.
Good socks.
Yeah, looks great in that chair.
Wow. He does. And I think I've said that to you, Pete. But if I haven't, I've always feel very fortunate and very well represented because you do present yourself well and your genetics lend themselves to that.
See, I love this. A man on man complimenting.
See, that's nice.
Not enough of that.
Men lifting up other men.
Aesthetically based. I love it.
Yeah.
I've tried to get him to wear suits and he drew the line.
Oh, really? I would think you would wear suits, but.
I mean, if he walked in with a man in a suit, I would think that we were going to get killed.
Oh, yeah. I'd be like, is the FBI here? What's happening?
Too intense.
It's the entertainment business. It's not banking. And he said that it actually would work against his ability to be a good manager. And I think he's right.
Yeah. Oh yeah. That makes a lot of sense.
I would agree with that.
Have you ever had a near death experience? I don't know why I felt the desire to ask you that question. It just came out.
I probably did. And I didn't realize it.
Oh really?
Right. Well, I imagine we're having them all day long. For our own good. We just don't know that we just, you know, made it by a hair's breadth.
Yeah. We got on the sidewalk just in time for that bus to drive by.
Making it through the day is a huge achievement. And it's the one that we usually just blow off. That's what the party mindset is. It's like, wow, you got to live another day.
Yeah.
Celebrate it. And by showing that gratitude, maybe we'll get to live another day after, you know, tomorrow.
When did you quit drinking and why?
Well, I had been straight edge. I guess what you define straight edge. Now there's many, that's not even the good term because some people, they take it to extremes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. They look at straight edge people. Like they look at PETA, like just get out of my fucking face. You're obnoxious kind of thing.
Or there could be someone who's straight edge where that just means they don't drink alcohol. Then there's going to be someone who's straight edge who doesn't drink alcohol, do any kind of drugs or smoke cigarettes or drink coffee. Then there could be one who's also a vegan. Then there could be one who's also doesn't know alcohol, no cigarettes, no caffeine, no drugs, no meat. And no sex. That was it.
That's the straight to the edge. So it's like religion. It's you just make it what you want it to be.
Like a monk. So because that's a kind of cloudy area. Yeah. For many, many, many years, I never drank alcohol or did drugs or smoked or anything. And then I think kind of like we mentioned, you start to want to wonder, well, this instinct that's felt so natural. How do I know that this is the right instinct? I'm going to do the exact opposite. And choose to do it. I mean, that do it with intention and I guess sort of full blown responsibility, not just fall into.
It feels better to do it that way than to just feel peer pressure.
I think that's what I would tell myself. Yeah.
Well, I think to want to put your mental state on another plane, I think that's been done since the beginning of time.
Yeah, well, that's a good way to look at it.
It's a good way to justify.
But then you partied too hard, or what?
Yeah, what happened?
Well, I mean, yeah.
So what kind of straight edge were you when you were straight edge?
No alcohol, no cigarettes, no drugs.
Okay.
Oh, I guess no caffeine, but that wasn't, I didn't really think about that.
And now you're drinking Monster Energy.
Oh, I'm sucking it down.
That's gone. Yeah. Right out the window.
I'm sucking that stuff down. I got a custom made nutraceutical blend, highly engineered pharmaceutical stimulants and caffeine that I need to get in my system. I got to keep it in my system 24/7, even while I sleep.
What?
I can't sleep without the stimulants.
Where do you get the stimulants?
From Salt Lake
City. Are you talking about Adderall?
No. I've tried that, but see, for example, I've had that recently and I didn't really care for that too much because it made my mouth real dry.
Oh yeah.
I need a wet mouth in order to sing.
Boy, if I had a nickel, you know?
Okay, for you to sing. Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah, I had to throw that in there.
Right. So was there like an incident?
Well, there was the many incidents that encouraged the ongoing not partaking in all these things.
Like what?
Seeing friends. I had a lot of close friends in high school that were very creative. This is how I see it now. You know, it probably wasn't this dramatic, but we worked on projects. That's all we did for fun. We'd make recordings. We'd make drawings. We'd make magazines together. We'd make videos and productions. And then one day, one of these guys, who I guess was a few months older than me, came into school and was acting all weird. And he had the styrofoam cup. This was like a very, these are the kind of, I mean, this was as powerful as the first time or the first few times maybe I saw a porn magazine. It was these shatterings of innocence. Because I'd heard about people drinking alcohol. I'd heard about people doing drugs, but I never thought I would see someone do that, let alone a friend. I'd heard about these porn magazines, you know, but then you have one in front of you. So it had that same level of, it was before this happened and then after. And and all of a sudden, all the fun that we had used to work so hard to conjure up out of thin air, they got that payoff just from drinking or from doing drugs. And I couldn't understand that at the time. And I didn't see it that way. I just knew they stopped doing stuff. And I kept saying, why don't you want to do stuff anymore? And they would say I was dumb and I don't get it. And you know, I got outcast. And that was it. That set a tone. I'd always been on the fringe. This is how life has always felt to me, is that I'm not doing it right and everyone else is, or at least the people that I like, they know something about life that I just can't quite grasp. And so I'm going to always be a tag along. I'm always going to be on the outside looking in. And I think a lot of people feel like this though.
Yeah. But
you still feel like that?
Yeah. Cause I feel you're not doing it right, even though you're very successful.
Well, because I look at everybody else who's more successful, of course.
I understand that. I understand the whole, like, you know, once you reach a certain level of success, it's like you always have to keep setting goals higher for yourself, or otherwise, what's the point? Like, your creativity is going to shrivel up and die if you don't have a vision.
Well, the drive I'm trying to do now is to serve this feeling for its own sake, to not lust after any particular result, to have the only ambition to be
to
how
create.
Useful can I be to the cause of a joyful, exuberant feeling in the world. And at my best moments, I can focus on that. When I'm a weak, flawed human being, then I think about all the other stuff that is not conducive to serving that purpose.
That would make it like, why would I even bother kind of attitude?
Yeah. But that's, for example, like stopping drinking alcohol. I could tell, okay, I'm not serving this purpose. I'm not giving the proper respect to this opportunity that I've been given. And this opportunity, not just to be in the music business or to work on this particular project, but to have had the parents that I've gotten to have, to have been born in the time and place that I was born, to be, you know, have health, to have the people around me that have supported me, like all these, have survived this many days, sometimes against great odds that I contributed to, you know, lowering those odds. I'm disrespecting everything and everybody else too, including people who would give anything to have, you know, 10% of what I was just handed.
Yeah.
And that the people who handed it to me worked really hard, sometimes died to be able to hand it to me. And I'm just going to blow it off. So it was a total change of, it was that this life is not something to get through and to try to, you know, soften the edges of and take the pressure off. This life is this chance. And this is actually part of a very traditional, what we call straight edge mindset, is that this is it. And you, to be a real human being, you have to out of respect for getting to come into existence, make the most of it.
Hmm. Do people who don't make the most of life bother you? Or
no,
do you just don't even?
Because that's what I'm basically doing.
Right.
I'm just telling myself I got to do better.
Yeah.
So yeah, no, I'm not doing it yet. It's all aspirational.
Really? So what would it look like then if you were doing it? Like, do you think that will ever happen? Or is that always, it seems like it's healthy to just keep that in your mind at all times to say, I'm still working up to this thing and then never actually get it. Cause
well, that's what, like you said, it gives you something to strive towards.
Yeah.
But you should be making progress.
Well, someone did point out, yeah, there is no good person. There's just better than you were yesterday. You know, how do you know when you hit that good level? When is that, like you're saying, when you reach that threshold and then you can stop and like, oh, I'm good.
I know. Yeah. So it's like, it makes you not want to meet the goal. It's like not wanting to read the last page of a book that you really love because you don't want it to be over.
Yeah. Kind
of
very well said.
Yeah. So do you have a kid?
Yes, I have two children, but I don't talk about that.
Oh, well, I wanted to know how do you know if you should have a kid or not? Like, what made you go, yes, we want kids? Because that's just something that I personally have been, I met for the first time in my life, I met a kid who made me want to have kids. Like this little girl, her name's Savannah, and she was just the most beautiful, like precious, adorable. Like I can't even describe it. This kid was so just a ball of light.
And I
have a nephew who I love more than life itself, but he doesn't make me want to have a kid. And then I met this girl and I was like, oh my God, I want to steal you. And then I'm like, but then when you actually think of having a kid, you got to figure out are my finances in order? Is this apartment big? Like there's so many things that I'm like, you know what? Whatever. I don't know. I don't know what checklist. Did you have a checklist in your head that you wanted to cross off?
There was never a doubt in my mind for as long as I could remember. Being a very little kid myself, a child, that I would have kids. But when I say there wasn't a doubt in my mind, I really mean that I just thought that's how life was.
Oh, okay.
So it was only till much more recently, before the kids were born, that I ever stopped and thought, well, wait a minute, this isn't something you have to do. Mm-hmm. Maybe it became really striking to think, well, wait, what if we don't have kids?
Yeah.
Holy smoke. Then you can keep doing all this other stuff forever.
That's where I'm at. But then
the only way I could say it, and this goes for my wife too, the soulmate kind of feeling, which a child is a similar version to that. Yeah. There's nothing to compare it to except that it's a fundamental element in life. It's like, it's like your parents, that the way that they exist, and that you wouldn't have come into being without them. It's like that in reverse. It's like you're meeting these elemental aspects of what it is for you to exist or to be a person.
Yeah.
And it's strange because you're making them and you're responsible
for
them.
That's such a mind fuck.
But they occupy a singular space, an archetypal space that goes beyond the trappings of ordinary life. And they can't be fit into that, yet they're, of course, part of that. So it's very mysterious. And that's why there's no amount of thinking through that will really get you the understanding of what it will be like. You can't take your own experiences so far. And I'm not just speaking to you. I can't. A person can't say, oh, I've done this, it'll be like that. There's no extension of what you've already experienced that could even come close, except to think about, what if there was someone that was like my mom or my dad, but that wasn't my mom or my dad? Meaning that singular.
Someone who took up that space.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. Because I imagine it's never the perfect time. It's never you always figure it out.
Right.
It's just, I guess the.
You hope you do.
Yeah, that's very true. But and
it is a big thing. So
it's
I'm not
a huge
saying, like,
deal. Yeah, I'm
you want to be responsible.
That was never one of the best sells for kids I've ever heard, though.
I agree because you know, I don't know. I know that it seems like I want to get the most out of life for me personally. And I think having a kid is for me, I think being part of getting the most out of life, but not until I've gotten the most out of life before a kid. How do you know that you don't? And then you're in your head forever. And then all of a sudden you're 47, you're barren. You know what I mean?
It's like a psychedelic experience. How would you describe that to someone who hasn't had one?
Yeah, I've never had. She has had several.
Okay. I mean, something that I'm very thankful that I did and that I truly see life in a different way now that I did it.
There you go.
Yeah. Mm.
But there's lots of, it should be also said that I don't think everyone has to have a kid. I don't think someone who doesn't have a kid, that doesn't count as real life. You'll hear people say things like that because they're trying to express to you this inexpressible event, this feeling that cannot be expressed except by these really hyperbolic statements.
Yeah.
But
well, going back to psychedelics, I mean, I think
wait, can I go pee?
Yeah, go ahead. Absolutely. What I was saying before the urine break, I hope you're feeling better.
I feel great.
Was just kind of relating back to psychedelics, was like, psychedelics didn't give me any answers that I didn't already have in my heart. I always kind of, it made me think of like the Wizard of Oz, like you went on this journey only to realize that you had the answer in your heart all along. And so that's, I think that could be like, for if you sit down, like you can answer like, do you want kids or not? Probably.
Oh.
Like a quiet moment with yourself.
I'm going to do Molly in the Woods this weekend, so maybe I'll just do it.
Or maybe Molly in the Woods will give you your answer.
It's very well said, though. I that was beautifully put. And you're right about that Wizard of Oz comparison. Because even the saying home is where the heart is, right? That doesn't just mean the building, your house, where you have your family or where you're most comfortable or where you'd rather be. Where is your heart? In you, in your body. That's home, right? Where you can, anywhere you go, where you take your heart with you is your home. Same thing as no place like home. The home is not a place, right? It's a, it's her.
It's a feeling.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's a feeling.
So when you, are there ever moments, I mean, I guess you have depression. Do you have depression?
I mean, not, I don't know if it's clinical or how.
Whatever you.
People describe being depressed, I say, oh yeah, when you feel bad. Now, out of respect for people who feel much worse than I do, because they must be out right. there.
Yeah. Oh yeah, yeah.
It's hard to imagine, but there must be someone who feels even worse than I felt.
Wow.
They would say, well, no, that's real depression. But I've never had it diagnosed, but I would say I would use that word, you know, despair.
Yeah.
Do you feel unmotivated or just really sad, but there's no like source? Like you can't be like, this is like, because I feel sad a lot, but I know exactly why I feel sad. It's not just like a vague sadness. It's like, well, because of rape and murder, like there's specific things that are connected, you know?
But on a cosmic level?
Yeah. I mean, I it's not normal to feel like you're responsible for everything in the world. I know that's
not
normal.
We get a lot of emails every day from
people. It's just
difficult.
I've always felt like this, though. That's why I don't want, that's why I never watch the news. It's not like I don't care what's happening in the world. It's just like, I can't absorb.
You care too much.
I feel like I absorb other people's experiences and feelings to a point where it's unhealthy to me.
An empath.
And then I have to separate myself.
Well, that's noble to be able to realize that and then work with it.
It feels selfish though sometimes.
No, because that's just that side of it.
You're protecting yourself.
Yeah, that guilt thing is part of it.
When it gets too much.
Well, and also I'm a Jew, so.
Yeah, the Jew thing helps or doesn't help.
Jew,
I don't know.
The Jew exacerbates it. My Jew's flaring up today.
How often do you feel depressed?
When it's a physical level where I feel physically ill to an extent and everything is slow, a walk becomes a shuffle.
Yeah.
And I just want to lay down and fantasize about oblivion. That fortunately has been very rare. And it still usually is if I'm very thoughtful and honest with myself, I can find a reason. It won't seem like a rational reason that's causing it. I mean, and sometimes it is based on the tragedy of existence and like what you're talking about, the terror and horror of the world and the seeming endless reasons to be upset all colliding and piling on at once.
Yeah.
Amplified by one's own powerlessness and weakness and self, for better or worse, self-absorption. It can be very intense. So that sort of lingering at all times, that actually, that is life worth living? How do I know life is good? Mm-hmm. Where's the proof that tells me that it is?
Am I doing a good job or not?
Well, that one I have a little better feeling about because I can do something about that.
Yeah, that's in your control.
Sometimes, a little, even if it's just a glimpse, like, well, I can work a little bit harder. I can focus a little bit more. And actually having a quest or a mission or a sense of purpose that is centered around what I would call positive effort or positive feelings or positive themes. When I feel that bad, I try now, and this is even within the last days, just trying to let that part of me exist. Like you said, still feel the feelings and but still take action towards the work that matters more than those low feelings.
Yeah.
To have a work that is higher minded and more worthy than those low feelings, so that even when you feel the low feelings, you still take the high road, you know, take the high action, and you keep yourself in motion and you don't let yourself get bogged down. But when I have gotten bogged down, yeah, it was bad. I think it's soul recovery. I think it's those big, it's the greater, the best things in life that you'll have the worst depression about, because your soul has stretched.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, bad things can do it too.
It's been exhausted.
Exactly. It's like after exercise, when your muscles are sore, you think, oh no, I did something really wrong.
Yeah.
But actually it's the body.
It's good.
It is.
It's recovery.
You're stretching yourself. And so that strange come down, I had it a few days ago when some people heard my new album for the first time. I kind of hadn't expected, I forgot that people were going to be able to hear it. It was this big, great moment. I felt really excited. And then the next day I felt really sad.
Yeah.
This melancholy sadness. And I couldn't figure out why.
Do you think that's because you were so high the
Definitely.
Day before?
That like a roller coaster.
Yeah, that's a tough one.
Well, it's like the day after Christmas. That's
absolutely
the saddest day. The end of the whole, I get, oh my God.
Going home from vacation, I get so depressed.
Oh God, it's
I've only
so
ever
sad.
Been on two, but it sucks.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's not only the come down, but it's the absorption of the greatness you just went through. Your body's trying to catch up. Your spirit is trying to catch up with all the amazing stuff that just happened and process it.
Yeah. Yeah. Working on a project, a creative endeavor, once you work on it, you're all amped about it. And then you wait for somebody to make a decision on it. And then every day that goes by that you're waiting for a decision, your excitement just goes to the ground. I'm talking about a very specific moment in my life that I'm currently experiencing. But, you know, it's fine. Even if you don't, it doesn't happen. You know, you fucking figure it out or whatever. I'm not worried about it. Have you ever attracted when you would date people, was there a certain type of personality that you attracted or that you were attracted to? Like, do you date people that are as positive as you, or are they depressed, or are they a mixture of both?
Well, my first girlfriend who I was in a pretty long relationship with, and we moved here to the city together when we were 18. And so there was some, and that's who I lost my virginity to. And she lost hers to
me. 5-year relationship, right?
Yeah, it was 5 or 6 years.
That's a long time.
At that age, for sure.
Yeah.
That she was extremely sweet, very optimistic, very buoyant, and cheerful.
Yeah.
And then my wife now, who I've been with for, Pete, you would know because you went to City Hall for us to get married. Was that 11 years ago, 10 years ago? I've been with
Wikipedia
her for,
said 2008 was when you got married.
Okay.
Is that weird that I was able to answer that? Is that strange?
That sounds about right.
Thanks, internet.
I met her in 2006, I think, or 2005. So it's been, 12 years or more. She is the epitome of that optimism, but to a degree where it doesn't even read as optimism. She's in an elevated state of grace.
Whoa.
But she's gifted. It's just, and I'm not saying
it's
she doesn't
career,
work at
isn't it.
Isn't
it? Because she's a
She is an aerobic instructor and an athlete. She was one of the, and she really was, she, one of the first female competitive snowboarders. You might not
Whoa,
be able to find her name out
so
there, but
cool.
in the
That's
early
awesome.
90s when it was first picking up, she was out there. So she's always been very athletic and
cool.
But it's her spirit, her attitude. It's sort of like I imagine what would it be like to wake up every day and have the world feel that way. And the closest I can get is marrying her and being around her.
I know you guys were introduced.
God, I'm getting my period soon. That makes me want to cry.
You guys are introduced by your vocal instructor. Is that correct?
That is correct.
I never know what I can trust on Wikipedia and what I can't.
That is accurate.
Okay. And so did your vocal instructor say like, oh, I have someone with a similar positive energy, or like how did.
Well, I have a very negative energy. So that's why
but it's like, it's weird because you say you do. Well, I mean,
you don't come off as that at all.
Yeah. I'm not like feeling a lot of negativity off you now, but also like you're kind of, this party lifestyle isn't negative.
Because I'm on the quest.
Right.
Yeah. But how can you can't, you're not negative on the quest. You're positive on the quest.
That's because I'm on the quest.
Because you're fighting
so
against
the quest
negativity.
Keeps you positive.
The quest keeps me positive. The quest is more important than the negativity. So I have to rise to the occasion.
So what was it that your vocal like coach was, why was they like, well, Andrew goes together with Sherry, right?
Yeah. Sherry had the lesson right before me. So I would come in.
Oh, they were just both in the same room?
And see her. Yeah. And she, I mean, I was just really struck by, she just was always smiling.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, it was just one of those, it was like, and the only way I can explain it, it was just like everything had led to that moment, and it was almost even kind of unremarkable in a sense, because there was nothing I could do about it. That's how it felt. Of course, I didn't really know this. I'm looking back and thinking about it. And I must be getting my period as well, because I'm getting a little choked up.
I hate that.
I don't think we've ever had anybody ever on the podcast talk about a meeting their significant other and have that kind of like visceral response. So it's very genuine.
I had a similar, maybe it's similar to you. When I first went on a date with Steven, it wasn't supposed to be a date. And then he had broken up with his girlfriend. So I was like, this is the date now. And then I very calmly at the end of the date in my head, I was like, oh, I just met my husband.
Well, yeah. I think that
it was calm. It wasn't
exactly.
And I would normally not be that calm in a dating situation. I don't know. I was a little, you know, like, what are we? But I didn't even ask that. I didn't even want to know. Cause I knew
it was
destiny. Weird.
Cause with so much of our lives, we're told that we make things happen and we find what we want and we go out and get it and we push and we scheme and we decide.
We cause
right?
this to happen,
right,
but
right.
that's just happened.
It happened to you. So destiny happens to you. Destiny dreams you up and pulls you towards it.
Yeah.
And it's that powerlessness that you have over true destiny that has that kind of calm, unavoidable, what's the right word? Pete, do you know the word I'm trying to think of? Hopefully we can edit this.
Destiny. Calmness. Well, it's just like
unavoidable.
Well,
I have to
thanks,
find
Pete.
Unavoidable.
I have to find the right, I have to go to thesaurus.
Yeah. No, I love this. I'm always Googling stuff on my phone while we're talking about the podcast. So take your time.
All right. Thank you. And you'll know this word, and that's the thing. It's not going to be some obscure word.
I actually have been starting to look up the definitions of words and realizing I'm using them wrong. Whoops.
Well, and also like sometimes
hyperbolic
words are used kind of in like in a colloquial way that is not.
It's not the
it's
right
not correct.
Yeah.
And we've like bastardized words.
We have, and I continue.
Inevitable.
To. Inevitable.
Oh,
that's a good word.
So simple. Okay, perfect.
Inevitable, and that I've found that quality running through most of the best. Experiences of my
really?
Life.
Really?
Yeah. That you're removed from it. Your decision-making process, all you can do is facilitate it.
Yeah.
This is going to happen. It's like the sun's going to rise whether you want it to or not. So what are you going to do now?
And I think the hard work that you put in throughout your life toward your career, towards just self-improvement, makes you better in those inevitable moments, makes you more prepared, makes you make the most out of it. I mean, it's going to happen either way.
Yeah. Hopefully can make you appreciate it. It that kind of goes back to that respect thing.
Yeah.
That you're trying to have respect for your own destiny.
Yeah.
Say, okay, well, if these are the cards that I'm being dealt, I have to play them the best that I can.
Yeah. Or it's a disservice to yourself and the world.
Yeah. And the world. Yep.
Because the more people that I think pursuing something that makes them happy, Corinne and I talk about this a lot. People listen to the podcast when they're at work and they'll say like, it saves them from their terrible job. I'm like, get out of that terrible job. Why do you got a terrible job? That sounds horrible.
It's
easier said than done, but to imagine a life where you wake up every morning and go to a place and do a thing that you don't want to be doing, like that to me, the day jobs that I had, especially the last couple months where I knew we were quitting them eventually to do this full time, I'm like, I just, every cell in my body was resisting yeah. going
you
into the
nauseous.
Building.
Right. Oh, yeah.
And it felt sick.
Yeah.
So
yeah, real
know.
Physical sickness. I fully relate to that. And that is every part of the world or, you know, existence telling you, don't do this.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You know, listen to it.
Yeah, if you can. Is there something noble about doing things you... See, I really wonder about this, like what you want to do versus what you're meant to do versus what you should do, right? These are three different areas.
Yeah.
And if they can coincide, then you got it made. Yeah. But at times there will be things, and we know this, where I don't feel like doing this. I don't want to do this, but I know I should.
And the person that works at the CVS, who's like a good attitude and happy and like is personable and looks you in the eye and is kind. I'm like, that person made my day and I'll never forget
Very
that person.
Admirable.
Because if you do a job that, you know, is considered mundane or whatever, but you have a good attitude about it. I'm like, you're fucking Superman.
Well, I think that sometimes those people have the power to see like, well, this isn't the end for me. This is just something. something in the middle. It's like a bridge from point A to point B. That's why I really liked my day job, because I was like, well, I'm not going to be here forever. And I'm really grateful that I get a day job that's like not too terrible, that allows me to do comedy at night. And I can leave one day and then someone else can have this day job and be, go on to be a painter or whatever they want to do in the nighttime. It was nice. I miss it.
It's a type of, it's the type of humility and a humbleness of who am I to want so much on one hand, which I think is important to keep in mind. Think of all those that have less and are in all sorts of different situations that would take our worst day as heaven, you know?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And also those folks, the people that you would see, that this is such a great example, that are working in a situation that we might think is undesirable or that they might not really be enjoying, but they have a great attitude. They could be tuned in to a level of purpose and focus and ambition that we can't even imagine. Not just that this is only temporary for me and I'm moving on to bigger and better things. They might see the entire endeavor of life as having nothing to do with a job and that this is, you know, they have a, that's what that's
wise,
that holy mindset, you know, where their kids, their family, their purpose could be coming from something totally unrelated to material experience. I've met people like this and they really are in that state. I don't know if they worked to get there or they say, you know, there's a plan for me that has nothing to do. And all I need to do is serve that goodness. You know, a lot of people would say this is basically God, that this is what God wants me to do. And I have found peace in serving what I've been told to do right now. And like, I think it was Fats Domino said his greatest ambition in life was to keep the Ten Commandments. And everything else that was going on was completely by the wayside. Not that he didn't take his career seriously. Not that he didn't try to play the best that he could and do his work the best that he could. But it would be disrespectful to want to do so well at his work that he would, you know, not be a good person by the standards of the Ten Commandments.
Right.
And what a shift of perspective that creates, right?
Yeah, damn.
You mentioned earlier that you didn't struggle very much with sexuality, but that you had struggles with your emotions. Can you elaborate a little bit more on what you meant by that? Like, was it processing emotions? Was it feeling emotions to their fullest? Was it coming to terms with these emotions that you were definitely having?
Well, emotions is a tricky word. So they're not just feelings. I would say it was the inner world that I lived every day.
So inside your head.
Yeah. As I said, I mean, you might find, I guess I'm glad you find it hard to believe, but extreme malevolent feelings, extreme anger, directed at nothing in particular, at everything. You know, a lot of spite and sadistic desires.
Like what?
Just wishing harm on people, but usually specific people, you know,
your life, famous people or like,
no, people
you know,
yeah, people that I could witness their agony. So wanting to manipulate them and cause them anguish and not physical pain. Although sometimes if I was really, you know, I'd imagine someone's face getting, you know, sanded off with sandpaper or something like that.
Whoa. But that's so garbage pail kids.
So slow.
What a torturous demise.
But more just, you know, I felt like there was something really wrong with me. And one of the ways that I sort of dealt with that, I guess, was wanting someone else to feel really wrong. Really, really bad.
I understand that, because that provides a temporary sense of fake relief.
Yeah, or that you relate to someone. Because I couldn't relate. I feel like I couldn't relate to people. So if I couldn't relate to him in a good way, maybe I could relate to him in a negative way. Now, this is all me analyzing things after the fact. I really don't have a lot of idea. I've talked to my parents because of this stuff, I guess, sent me to child psychologist.
I was going
to
say, did you ever see a professional?
Yeah, well, when I was 12 or 13, I went a few times, I guess, on the onset of puberty when these things started to probably get amplified, these feelings.
Yeah.
And then later when I was getting in a lot of trouble for sort of mischief, you know, like mail fraud and scams and business scams.
Whoa, that's some like high class mischief.
Scheme. Yeah, like schemes. Yeah, it was
very
like
sophisticated.
Network marketing.
I was just egging the neighbor's house. Damn.
Stuff like that. Yeah, fraud and making fake baseball cards. And then they sent me back.
That's high level.
No, that's great, because my dad owns a baseball card store.
Well, he might have one.
Oh, I know. I know.
There's a lot of them out there, but those counterfeit cards.
You have to, it's got to take skill to do that.
A type. Yes. Well, a type of, that was a project, you know, that was a project. That was a low project, right? Appealing to my lowest nature,
right,
which was extremely thrilling. I mean, the waves of pleasure that I even still get now talking about it. And it's still there. That whole side of me is still there. The kind of person that would go to great lengths to infiltrate an entire apartment complex heating system with Limburger cheese.
Wow.
That and reveling in the,
well, just knowing too that you could affect change in a bad way for that many people in an instant is a powerful feeling.
Yeah. So I had to flip that and then get into this party mindset. So,
okay. Well, wow. I think you're always like a pretty high achiever then.
Yeah. Even when you were scheming, you were crushing it.
Right. Yeah.
So yeah, the last time after I got in trouble with these lawyers in Ann Arbor because I was using their law firm to write fake letters to threaten to sue other businesses and things like that. And so I went back to see a different child psychologist this time. And after these sessions, which I ended up not, I guess, sort of liking by the end, maybe four or five times. I don't even remember. There's a lot of this is a bit of a blur.
Yeah.
But his big, he called my parents in. It was the final session. He was going to have his great diagnosis. And he said, "You have a devilish side. Well, thanks very much for coming in." And that was it.
Andrew's and I said, a bit knew naughty. That. Bye.
Yeah, we knew that coming in.
Yeah, that doesn't have a work. Okay.
He said, "You have to figure out how to control it and let it work for you." And I think, you know, I
wow, well, that was
this,
good advice.
I think that's I did exactly what he said. I said, "Okay, well, I'm going to use this power for good as much as I can."
Has it ever gotten, has your... Well, I guess this isn't more mischievous, but your like emotions and stuff, has that ever gotten in the way with a sexual relationship? Like, have you ever gotten too attached, or have you ever had the desire to emotionally manipulate a sexual partner? Because maybe, like, have you ever had a situation where you liked the girl more than she liked you? Because that to me is an agonizing situation. And
not really, because I don't think I would have gotten in a relationship with someone, you know, that would have turned into a full relationship unless there was a good balance.
Unless it was mutual.
Most of the relationships I've been have been long term, you know, for years. So there wasn't a lot of, there was some dating and short term stuff, but I didn't like that, just like I knew I wouldn't like it.
Right.
It's very hard for me to leave the person after I've been intimate with them.
Yeah.
You know, I've gone to that extent to want to be with them. Now I'm just going to say, oh, see ya.
You've never had a one night stand?
No, I did. And it was just as awful as I ever thought it would be.
Yeah.
And not awful,
not
because
for you.
It was awkward. I felt strange about leaving. I wanted to spend more time with them. That was the feeling.
Yeah, it's weird to be physically the closest two human beings can be.
Exactly.
And then you just go away and don't talk to each other like you never met. I'm like, that sounds so harsh and cold. It makes me sad.
Yeah, I tried it. And still, even for years after that, I thought, oh, well, I should like this. You know, I should be able to like this. And it's only been, again, very recent where I've thought, well, you know, maybe these are noble qualities to have. Maybe it's okay that you don't want to do all these things that other people say they like to do. Maybe they don't actually even really like them that much, and they're just saying they do because they saw it in a movie or something. I don't know.
It's just a matter of two. Some people do like them as much as they say they like them, but you know, whoever flaunts around that they like XYZ just out of nowhere randomly, I feel like a lot of times it really turns out they're insecure about the thing. They don't really like it. But also too, that's the cool part about being a person, is that like some people are into like crunching bugs and they get really turned on by that. And then some people just like missionary position, and that's what works for them. And that's really cool. And I think a lot of times people feel pressure and shame around sexuality because they think they shouldn't or should not like X, Y, Z.
You're right. It doesn't always
so fucked up.
You're very well said. Cause it's not always, I think most people, there was this for years, there was the idea that the quote unquote freaky stuff was what you're supposed to feel bad about. And then it almost flipped and became the vanilla stuff.
Now you're
stuff
vanilla.
Yeah, you're
feel bad about.
I know.
But you're right. It's each person gets to be their own person, and to have the confidence. And certainly I have someone who's still struggled with a massive doubt and not in just myself, but in everything, doubt and insecurity about the world. Of course you question those things, and to be able to just have the quietness of spirit to say, this is what I am. And not even have to say more than
that. That's it. Yeah.
Not to explain it, not to understand it, not to defend it, just to be it.
Yeah.
And that could take a lifetime of mastery.
Yeah, that's like almost the purpose of life, almost.
I think you're well said.
Because I know, it's like, it is weird because you're a performer, you're a musician, you have a new album out, which we'll talk about at the end. But like that group mentality, that herd mentality, like Corinne and I perform stand-up all the time. And it's really interesting to me even to be in a crowd and to... A crowd will do things that an individual won't do. Mm-hmm. And you almost feel like, you know, I've done things at a concert that I'm like, when everybody takes their lighters out or whatever. And I'm like, this is not anything I would normally do. But it's weird when a crowd does something, then you're in that crowd. You just do it. It's this weird thing. And you can control a crowd. You can, you know, the crowd can be on your side or not on your side. And there's not a lot of individuality. And I feel like people take that mentality over into life. That's what happens. And like,
even with laughter, what everybody else is doing. You can, that's why you like, sometimes people bring like filler laughers because people, even at a comedy show, feel uncomfortable laughing by themselves. We don't do this.
It's true.
We don't have the budget really. So
Kurt and I laugh really loud. Like comedians, I think express like my version of good job is laughing at a comic, obviously. But, we comics have very verbose laughter, my laughter is very loud. You'll hear it when I enter the room. And I guess I did that on purpose. I didn't really realize I was, but then when one person starts laughing at something, everybody gets going. And then sometimes I'll find myself laughing at something cause it sounds like it's funny, but I don't really get it. I'm like, I'm a fucking idiot.
I can relate to that too. Well, they say, and I'm sure you're familiar with this, that it's wired into us in our perception that if we see someone crying, we'll start to cry. I that happens to me all the time.
Yeah.
If I'm watching some TV show, even an ad or a movie, and I don't even know what's going on, I have no emotional investment or attachment to the character, and they're going through something. It might be a very emotional scene, but once there's crying, especially if it's real, like a documentary, I have no idea or no care about the concept, but once they start crying, I start to cry.
Yeah.
It's just, it happens. It's something we're wired to do. And we're always looking for ways to connect or to recognize the connection that's already there. And I think we're not losing our individuality in those group moments. We're almost reinforcing it by finding it in other people in a strange way. I mean, it's kind of a paradox.
It feels good to be in a crowd, though. It does.
There's times for that. And we're always in a crowd. I mean,
true.
You can tell that, especially when you're in a city. But we're all here on the globe at the same time. It's getting to be more crowded every day, for better or worse. And, well, maybe it's not. But the idea that we are each a universe into ourselves is not diminished by the fact that there's other universes, right?
Totally.
And when they say beautiful things like it's all one, you know, these ancient concepts of oneness, the oneness exists as a singular person and as the oneness of the whole, right? It's all the same kind of one.
True.
Or something.
Something like that. Or something.
Do you ever have like, you seem to be somebody who, if you want to take on a new skill or learn something new or just go jump into a project, you want to learn how to do it right and be the best, or, you know, do it the best of your ability and figure out ways to get better at it. Do you have that same attitude towards sex? Like Steven, my boyfriend is someone who wants to be good at sex and he wants to like discover new things and do weird shit. And like his curiosities with sexuality are drive him to like want to, you know, appreciate it, but also like see like what can I do with it kind of thing with my sexuality. Well,
I never even thought about that.
Okay. So do you have
very admirable. I'm quite I'm blown away by that approach.
Honestly, it's just curiosity. It's just maintaining a sense of curiosity with sexuality, I think, is what it is. Of like, well, what could we explore? What would we want to do? What is something that I don't know? Is there any, do you have anything sexual that you're like, that you'd want to explore that you haven't yet?
I mean, there may be the possibility. I think in this area, I thought about, oh, well, when I'm much older, I'll save that. Or if I ever get burned out on this, that, or the other, like I can allow myself to someday become debauched. I guess I thought, you know, reading, you know, like Marquis de Sade's books and things like that, you think, okay, wow, there's a whole bunch of things out there you can do if you need to, you know, if you can't get satisfaction from what you're doing right now. But, you know, it makes me think about food because we were just talking about cooking with these food professionals. And I just always thought of food as kind of like, well, I have to eat. And it's not, I enjoy it. Mm-hmm. And, but I don't care about it past a certain, I feel like I'm focused on something else and I like clothes and there's been times I've been very interested in fashion and my dad is obsessed with clothing and his father owned a haberdashery, like a men's clothing store. Yeah. And, but there's times when I just, I don't know. I don't have that much capacity, I think.
Totally.
What
you can't
realizing.
Be obsessed with everything. You can't be passionate about every facet of your life because then it's like
some people do.
You have to sleep.
Some people get really into sleeping and calculating how they're going to get the most advanced sleep and how they're going to get the better.
Totally.
Right. You know, they take everything to that level. And I do admire that and admire to the point where I compare myself and say, gosh, should I be doing better? Should I be working harder? Should I be cooking special meals at home? And should I be going out and being interested in restaurants? And should I be going on vacations and trips and exploring the world and doing all these things that I'm just not in? I'm only interested in doing what I'm doing with this.
I think that's all you have to do. Because, you know,
even with sex, I don't know.
Yeah, no, it makes sense though, because there's so many causes in the world, right? Like Corinne and I always talk about women's rights and feminism and abortion rights and equal pay and all this shit. And then, you know, I'll post something on Instagram about like we went to the San Diego Zoo and we did like this experience ticket that they offer where you get to like be near the animals. Mm-hmm. And I posted a video because of this beautiful jaguar and all these people were commenting like, oh, anti-zoo. And I'm like, I don't have it in me to give a shit about every cause. I can understand that they're important and I applaud people's passions. We need people passionate about all the causes. I don't have it in me to be passionate about every single cause. It's impossible. I do think it's impossible and it's exhausting and it just sounds... Someone. My brain is already crowded.
Mm-hmm. Also, sometimes people make shit up because zoos do a ton of conservation work. So,
true.
I mean, I can't with these people.
Someone said to me, a very wise man, he meant it in a critical way, and I've since learned from it, that it's been said before, we each have so much light or power. And if you focus that light, it'll be very bright in a spot. And you can diffuse it a bit larger, maybe light up a few areas, especially if they're in the similar vicinity. So if you're an artist, you could do sculpture and painting. But if you start to diffuse the light and spread it much farther, it'll be hard to distinguish between the shadow and the darkness and itself.
And it blends in, yeah.
It does. So it's not to say we can't take on a lot. It's not to say we can't spread ourselves and spread that light as fast, as wide as we can, or find ways to make the light source brighter and have more light to work with. Or maybe even ways to have multiple pinpoints. Maybe there are people that had more than one pinpoint of light in them. But that really struck me, and I thought it related to how actually I felt. Like you're talking about, like I feel like I want to be able to do more, but I kind of realize I can't. I won't do a good job of those other things.
Right.
Even if I do care about them, how much energy, how much vitality do we each have? Even in how many hours are we going to even be awake throughout all of life? What are we going to do within that when we're not eating, doing menial tasks and necessary chores and cleaning the house and sleeping? These waking hours, we have a few every day. I think it's, if you really break it down, probably two a day. And I'm probably spending them with you right now, right? That we can actually do something that can amount to something. Well, you're welcome and thank you. But that actually amounts to something and has the potential, that slim one in a million chance of actually making some kind of an impact in a positive way.
Yeah.
So that, and that's it. And if you can find something that resonates with you where you're drawn to it to do that kind of work of focus, then maybe we don't need to doubt ourselves and think, oh, well, maybe I should also be doing that. And I should care about that. And you can care. I think that's one of the magical things about the human spirit is it does have the capacity to care about everything. But as far as taking physical action, the body is quite small and frail, as we know. It's very powerful and it has a lot of ability. And it's a magical vehicle that we get to navigate this world with, but it can only do so much no matter how big our heart is.
Damn. You just crush it at talking. You really do. And singing. So you have a new album, and what is it called and how can we get it?
It's called You're Not Alone, and you should be able to get it anywhere and everywhere. That's the beauty of technology these days, right?
Yeah.
If you want it, it's there.
And the album cover was painted by Boris and Julie.
Yes.
And the documentary piece that Steven did on it. Oh my God. It was so, I love them.
Yeah, I love
how excited you are. The story about you love those comic book paintings or those paintings of that they used to do. And then you recognize their name and then somebody, it was an award show, right? That they were responsible for the poster.
Yes.
The cover is so good.
Oh, thank you. And thanks to them. Thanks to Boris Vallejo and Julie Bell, the power couple of fantasy art.
And I love when an artist puts attention to detail. That's one of the many reasons that I love Beyonce, is because like she looks at every element of her career, and she, the attention to detail in the smallest areas are, it's so impressive, and it just adds to the whole package. And I think you're an artist that does that as well. And well, I really think it's cool.
That's very kind of you to say. Thank you.
And you said you haven't come out with an album in 10 years. Is that?
10 years is a good estimation, depending how you look at it. No matter how you look at it. Yeah. Many years.
Yeah.
Many years.
A long time.
So yeah. Why now? And why does it inspire you?
The
or?
Will of the party gods. I have turned
Hell
myself
yeah.
over to them, as we've been talking about.
Right.
And one of the great things that comes with that is I'm always surprised when things happen and what happens and how it happens. As far as why it happens, you'd have to ask them, because I have no idea. I didn't even realize that 10 years had gone by.
Oh.
That was a horrifying realization. I thought I'd just been a few.
You were too busy having fun.
I was too busy partying in the best way. So
yeah.
Yeah. So there's no particular logical reason. It's just how what happens when you party very hard.
And your music is so uplifting, and it's just, you could put it on and listen to it in any, no matter what mental state you're in. That's why I like your music a lot, is that it can bring you to a more heightened state.
Even if
you're upset or whatever, it just like chills you out when you're pissed, and it just makes you happier when you're already joyful. And
thank you.
It's just
I'm
good
glad
music.
That you feel that's the point of it. That's exactly why I made it first and foremost for myself.
Yeah.
Music was the one consistent, reliable thing in my life from childhood that changed the way I felt for the better every time.
That's awesome.
Every time. And I really mean that to this day, that the darkest, worst moment I ever had, I couldn't fully give myself over to everything sucks because music.
Wow.
could not withstand my doubt. I mean, it could withstand my doubt. Pardon me. Music could withstand even my most severe negativity with ease, kind of with like a laugh and a pat on the back. Like, oh, nice try. You tried to dismantle music. And then it would, you know, I could just think of a song and not just appreciate the mood or the feeling, but my body would change. Mm-hmm. You know, it made me a different version of myself for the better. So, yeah.
Music is very powerful force.
It really is.
Well, thank you for creating it. And thank you for being on the show.
Thank you for having me. I really enjoyed getting I learned a lot today.
Cool. So did we.
Yeah. This was very good.
And where do you have a website? It's andrewwk.com.
That's correct.
Okay, perfect. And that's where people can find where you're going to be
on
the road.
Tour dates and the album and t-shirts about partying and a lot of other stuff.
Nice. Awesome. So visit andrewwk.com. Guys, thank you so much for listening to Guys We Fucked, the anti-slut shaming podcast. We'll talk to you next Friday.
Therapy company that enables you to improve your mental health from anywhere at any time. Get matched with a licensed therapist from over 2,000 choices and message them whenever you need to. No commutes and no judgments. For a special offer for our listeners, visit talkspace.com/GWF and use code GWF to get $30 off your first month and show your support for this show. Talkspace, it's therapy for how we live today.
This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. It's a simple truth. No matter who you are, mental health challenges can affect you, and how you manage them can make all the difference. That's why everyone should have access to mental health support that meets them where they are and helps them get through. BetterHelp provides online therapy on your schedule. It's flexible, simple to use, and more affordable than in-person therapy. Connect with a licensed therapist selected just for you. Learn more at BetterHelp.com. That's BetterHelp.com. BetterHelp.com.